You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. A new film this year, The Legend of the Underground, documents the life of AVACer Michael Igodoro and other LGBTQ Nigerians. At AVAC, Michael has led vital work advocating for marginalized communities affected by HIV all over the world, and he's supported activist work in North America, Africa, and elsewhere to win policies that advance HIV prevention and human rights. But his work at AVAC is just one chapter of this story. Filmed in both the U.S. and in Nigeria, Legend of the Underground follows Michael and a few other individuals as they confront enormous risks and insist their humanity be recognized. But Michael says the film takes on more than just issues of LGBTQ rights, capturing a moment of larger change and potential in Nigerian culture, as well as a kaleidoscope of personal expression among LGBTQ Nigerians.
Well, the movie is about a community that has been so broken and now gets to share their lights in the biggest platform in the world. And I think it's about the people that have so much beauty and have been through a lot. It's about a community. It's about friendship. It's about love. It's about resistance. It's about fighting for your rights and just being yourself.
Is the movie documenting the beginning of a movement for gay rights in Nigeria?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say gay rights. I would say it's a beginning of a revolution. I think there's a lot happening in Nigeria right now with young people and including queer people, right? I think it's like a lot of things going on. And I think this movie, it's about the beginning of a revolution and, you know, be it police brutality or, you know, a religious rights or religious freedom or freedom to express yourself. And I think it's a beginning of a revolution of people fighting back and saying enough is enough.
Got it. So queer voices are finding their place in a larger movement.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I have more questions for you about what's happening in Nigeria today. And the film really takes us into this. But first, the filmmakers, Nika Onuora and Giselle Bailey, got the idea to make this film after hearing about events in your life that take us back to 2012. That's the year you had to flee Nigeria as a gay man. I should mention here that Nika is of Nigerian descent and an out lesbian herself. She said, as a queer woman, hearing what happened to you made her determined to get your story out there. So tell us what she learned about your story. What was your work in Nigeria? What happened in 2012? What forced you to flee?
Yeah, I started working in Nigeria as a peer educator to educate people around HIV, you know, prevention and treatment because a lot of my friends were dying from HIV. I also started the first support group for gay men living with HIV in Nigeria, which expanded to several other cities in Nigeria. So my work around, you know, prevention, also being someone living with HIV and, you know, just speaking about my life as someone living with HIV sort of gave people the confidence to also come out and be open about their HIV status and get, you know, healthcare and get medication because people were scared of getting medication because they felt like, you know, it's a double stigma. First, you were gay and then now you're HIV positive. You lose your gay friends and you lose your straight friends because you're gay. That sort of started my advocacy in Nigeria. And also from just being on my own from when I was 14, I think I'm just one in a million people who've left their home at such a young age. And it shouldn't be, but like it's what has happened even to today, even in the US here. A lot of young people have been thrown out of their homes because of their sexual orientation or because they are transgender.
Even right now?
Yeah. I was lucky not to have been killed. I'm just an example of what is going on right now. And not even back then, but still right now. And that is why I became a strong advocate for prevention because I thought like, you know, the best way to prevent HIV is by sharing information. And condoms, lubricants, and all of those prevention tools became a part of my advocacy work. And I wrote an abstract about it, which led me to the U.S. to the AIDS conference in 2012.
So it's 2012. Nigeria has been debating what's called the same-sex prohibition law for several years already. This is a draconian law that threatens people with 10 years of prison time for same-sex relationships. The law was enacted a short time after this. You head to the U.S. for an AIDS conference, and the Washington Post writes a story, and it names you.
Yeah, and they did an article about me and several other young gay men who, or young activists who were participating at the conference. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, it was the first time of coming to a different city that you could be yourself, be gay and be trans, be whoever you want to be without any judgment. So we went to a gay bar in Washington, D.C., and we were having fun. Then this reporter who was, you know, was taking pictures of us as well. And then the next day, there was an article about young gay men from Africa having great time in D.C. and with our names and with our pictures on it. So I left D.C. to Mississippi, and I was there a couple of days later on when the article came out. You know, at that time, I still felt like, you know what, it's not that serious. It's just in the U.S., so nobody's going to know about it. So I still went back home to Nigeria. That was when I got back home. Things became really bad. The article came out everywhere. I was attacked, and then I had to flee. I come back to the States, I think, a couple of days after that.
And your life is never the same again.
Yeah.
You've been living in the U.S. ever since. In fact, in the film, we see you go home for the first time since 2012. How have conditions changed in Nigeria?
You know, I think things have changed a little bit. More people are sharing their stories, to be honest. And, you know, people are learning about what it means to be LGBTQI and what it means to be trans, what it means to be gay, you know, queer, non-binary, those identities. And, you know, they are seeing them. They are not just reading about them. They are seeing them in their friends group, in school, in their communities. And I think it's changing the minds and hearts of people. We still have a long way to go in terms of policies and laws. But I think in terms of hearts and minds of people, we've gone a long way. People in Nigeria actually protest Queer Lives Matter, and being able to do that freely, that gives a testament to where we've gone as a movement and where we're going.
So people are being bolder now. Back in 2012, there must have been pressure to not come out.
People came out. There were organizations, right? There were organizations that I was working with. There were a lot of people, individuals in Nigeria who were still speaking out. But I think it wasn't as the same as it is right now, where we've gone from maybe like 10 organizations then to up to 35 organizations now working around LGBT rights in Nigeria. And some of them are like very vibrant and speaking out publicly and challenging the government publicly. Back then, you have to do it in a diplomatic way. So now it's like more freer, I would say, but it's still dangerous, you know, but I think it's different than it was then.
And there are some other people we get to know whose story shows how that danger persists. We meet a young man who calls himself the world-famous James Brown. He's one of 57 men caught in a raid on a club, all charged with violating the same-sex prohibition law. The arrests look like a high-profile intimidation tactic by the authorities. They round up these men. They put them on camera. This is a direct threat to their safety in a homophobic society. But James Brown gives a defiant press interview, and his words go viral. He says, "They didn't caught me in the act," and he never backs down. Did you know James Brown before, or was it the arrest and his viral video when you became aware of him? And what did you think when you saw his video?
I actually heard about the 57 men who were arrested because I got an alert from my friends in Nigeria and then from the media about like some men being arrested. So I was actually working with individuals to get those people released. And then suddenly we got this video that was out by from this individual who was speaking out, who was challenging the law enforcement officer, asking him about like, this is what the law said. Someone have to be able to testify that they caught you, you know, having same-sex relationship with someone else for you to be arrested. So he was right. I was just intrigued by the way he did it. And people were making fun of him, but I was like, no, this person is like really, really right. And he's speaking out and not being afraid. And I was just so intrigued by his braveness. And then suddenly the filmmaker saw the video too, and that was how it started.
So the filmmakers want to meet James too. As a viewer, I couldn't help but be bowled over, really, by the courage he shows. He refuses to let fear overcome him. Of course, at times, you know, viewers will see his anxiety, his worries how much he's really up against. And you, too, have chosen to be outspoken at great risk, being out about your HIV status, your sexuality, the leadership role in peer support groups that you took on in the context of a homophobic society. So you share this with James and others in the film. What does it take? Where does this courage come from to face down intense risks like this? Because many people do not find their voice in this way.
One thing that the filmmaker did was to tell my stories through the lives of so many people. And I think, you know, I could see myself through James. I could see myself through Deji. I could see myself through Ed Dafe. A lot of my story were told through them because those are the things that are still happening right now. Like, James was arrested based off some presumption that he's homosexual without any actual fact. I was attacked based on some presumption of a newspaper. So I could see myself in him. And I could see that, you know, he was challenging whatever the government was saying. So he was speaking out in the face of danger. Like, he could have been arrested, he could have been killed, he could have been disappeared. But he didn't care about that. He still went ahead and spoke out. I think sometimes when you are at a breaking point, when you don't really care about, you know, what happens next, you know, because you know you have nothing to lose. And I think it's a combination of people. You're not just brave because you want to be brave. It's because you really have nothing else to lose and because you've lost everything. Like someone like James, he can't go back to his parents' house. He's been detained at the police station. So he's like, what do I have to lose? Right? Like, what do I have to lose? I have to speak out. Like, if that's the one thing I do before these people kill me, I have to speak out.
Right.
And I think that's what he's doing.
I'm wondering about the role of chosen family that we see in the film. Your family of birth rejected you, the same for James, and others, as we've already talked about. It's a kind of truism for queer people all over the world that many of us have made our own families because we've had to. What's important for people to understand about this?
If you look at the film, there are so much young people who should not be in this situation that they are in. Young people from the safe house to my friends to myself. It shouldn't be this way. People should be in school, should be in their family's house. They should be, you know, where they're safe and comfortable. It shouldn't be this way.
Exposed to danger.
Danger and also like trauma. It's a failed society. And it shouldn't be this way. And I think they are finding families in where they can find it, in people like them. Yeah. And you have to be there for them. And, like, I am a cell phone away from James, like a text message away from him every day. And he's as terrified of this movie as I was. And he's brave, so brave. And so is many other people. But the way you become a leader is by showing up and being there for people. I am that for my friends, and my friends are that for me.
One final question I have for you, Michael. Participating in this movie, in the press interviews, doing this interview with me now, makes you revisit some of the most painful experiences of your life. You must care a lot about what good you think can come from this to be willing to do that.
Yeah, I honestly believe that movement change and revolution starts by people sharing their stories. The more we are all able to share our stories, the more we are able to change the world. And I think my story is just one bit of a million other stories that are to be told. And I think I don't say I represent the voice of a lot of Nigerian LGBT people. So I don't. I represent my story. And then telling my story helps, hopefully, to give confidence and give light to other stories that need to be told. So that's why I do it. That's why I share my story.
Thank you, Michael. The movie is The Legend of the Underground. It was featured at the Tribeca Film Festival this year and is now available for streaming on HBO. Check it out. You've been listening to PX Pulse, recorded in the New York City studios of the Radio Foundation and the Relic Room. Our theme music was composed by Alexi Stevens. Our engineer is Sam Baer. I'm Jean Barron.